Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal. Hey, we are live, pal. Change it up this time. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the A-Side Live Show here on MMA Fighting. It is, of course, Wednesday, July 21st, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. If you are watching live, if you're listening on the podcast after the fact, I hope you had a great Wednesday, July 21st, or whatever day you're listening to this episode on. Anyway, joining us this week, she's back. She's in the fist fighting capital of the world, not just MMA, but all of combat sports, apparently. Welcome back, Kristen King. Kristen, how's life in... I was trying to think of a positive thing to say about Florida, so I'm just going to say, how's life in Florida?
Yeah, don't hurt yourself. Don't think about anything positive. It's fine. It's good. It's a sunny day. I can't complain. Are you good? Because I fully expected a text message this morning saying that I need some time to grieve after what happened last night. So it's good to see you.
It happens, man. I'm definitely not taking it as bad as our colleague Sean. His life is probably over at this point, because for those of you who only watch fist fighting, the Phoenix Suns lost to the Milwaukee Bucks in game 6 yesterday in the NBA Finals. We don't have to talk about that, though, because nobody cares about my thoughts on it. We lost. I'm not even going to say we. The Suns lost fair and square. Oh, I would say we if it was like another basketball team, but I'm not going to try to pretend that I'm a lifetime Suns fan, just the last 10 years. But congratulations to Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks. Dude is a legend. Probably one of the 50 greatest basketball players of all time, but no one cares about any of that right now. Casey, how's life in Englewood?
Life is good. I watched some Sprouts last night, you know, I think that Giannis guy, he's good.
He's really not good. No, he's not.
I don't know. He's good. Yeah, I think we have, you know, he could, you know.
Giannis is good at basketball like John Jones is good at MMA. They're generational talents. They transcend good. He is already a top 5 power forward that's ever played the professional basketball.
Suns and nine. Jose, they're coming back.
There is a silver lining here, though. There's a silver lining. You don't have to do that shoey you were planning.
Dude, I was in for the shoey.
No, you didn't.
Me and Sean were in. No. Yeah, I never saw. I don't think it's like, whatever. It's 3 seconds of your life. Like, and if the Suns had won a championship, it would be 3 seconds of my life. And I'd be like, yep, cool. That was great. Don't have to ever do that again. But I was on record, so I was going to come through with it. Just like I was on record that if Chris Moutinho had beat Sugar Sean O'Malley, I would have cut and dyed my hair exactly like Chris Moutinho. But it just didn't work out. It didn't work out. So it would have been fun. It would have been a good time in my life. But sometimes things don't work out and the fans lose out, because they don't get to see me take the shoey. But anyway, you guys know the drill. You can ask any questions you want in the comment section on the YouTube, because Casey's monitoring that. On Twitter, on the site, on Facebook, Periscope, whatever you want to comment on. Casey's man in the comments on all that good stuff. So without further ado, Casey, what is our first question?
All righty. Do, 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 do.
From Tristan Gordette on the site, is Corey Sandhagen still getting slept on? In your opinion, do you get the sense that fans are sleeping on Sandhagen even though he's the favorite heading into the fight against TJ? I feel the UFC are promoting the narrative that TJ has owned up to mistakes for EPO, kind of making him look sympathetic. Friends and I have talked to are leaning towards Dillashaw to win this fight, putting himself in a position to win the bantamweight title that he never lost. Note, Jose, please send my regards to Sean Alshadi, as I know he's grieving right now about the Suns. I know it has to be tough for him seeing that last night. Yeah, it's much tougher on Sean than me. I'm not going to front or pretend. Sean's whole life came crashing down last night. So if anyone has a way to contact him, you should probably reach out and see if that man is okay. Anyway, back to the question. Is Corey Sandhagen still getting slept on? Kristen, we don't have to get into who you think is going to win the fight because it's still fairly early in the week and they still have to make weight and all that fun stuff. But to answer this question, are people overlooking Corey Sandhagen heading into his fight against TJ Dillashaw?
I mean, it's a weird position to be in just because you're meeting the guy that was at the top of the division before he got suspended by USADA. And I think that was Tristan Gordette. I think he put it perfectly when he said that they're trying to make TJ Dillashaw a more sympathetic figure by kind of atoning for the mistakes that he said he made. I'm not sure if I would pin that as a mistake necessarily, because it's something that you knowingly did in order to drop down and have that fight with Henry Cejudo at UFC Brooklyn. But the thing is, that is a narrative that I think is easier to paint as opposed to Corey Sandhagen, who has been doing what he's supposed to do. I mean, he was pretty much pinned as a future contender, a future title contender at bantamweight, and he very much still is that person. It's just when you're doing everything right, like the right way, what else are you supposed to say about that? Like, I personally would have loved to see more of Corey Sandhagen in this fight week, especially after those spectacular knockouts that he had against Marlon Moraes and Frankie Edgar, which was like a knockout of the year type of contender, you know what I mean? But that's what he's supposed to do. That's what's expected. So he has the task of meeting someone who was that guy before he could even make these moves. So, of course, they're going to put a lot of the promotional material behind TJ Dillashaw because he's been gone for 2 years. People want to know what's been going on. How does he feel about the whole situation? What is he going to look like? He's jumping into the deep end of the division by taking on someone like Corey Sandhagen, who I believe his only setback recently is the Aljamain Sterling fight, and that was a number one contender's fight. So I think it's a little bit lopsided as far as coverage, but that's how the cookie crumbles, really. I mean, it sucks, but maybe he is being slept on. I don't know. Personally, I don't feel like it because I know what he's capable of, but to, like, the casual fan, maybe this seems more about TJ Dillashaw than it does Corey Sandhagen.
I also just think, I think you just said it right there at the end. The story this week is TJ's return. The story this week is not Corey Sandhagen could be the best bantamweight in the world. Anyway, Casey, are people overlooking Corey Sandhagen? Or I'll phrase it differently. Is the UFC doing, as to take one of our colleagues' phrases, is it promotional malpractice what they're doing with Corey Sandhagen right now?
I think it's actually a little of both, to be honest. I think the UFC... The UFC can only tell one story at a time, and I feel especially for a fight night card, and for this card, for this main event, they're really just telling Dillashaw's story. I really don't know very much about Sandhagen, to be honest, other than the a few interviews we get, and the interviews, I just get that he's a unique dude. That's all I get from him. Basically, the Dillashaw story is easier to tell. You know, USADA suspension, him being a champion, him getting his belt stripped, him going for two titles. You know, there's just a lot more history in the UFC with Dillashaw. Sandhagen is just a more difficult story to tell, casual fans. And I think that's why he's getting slept on a bit. But Yeah, I just think the UFC just aren't feeling. I feel if Corey wins big, then they're gonna put a lot more, you know, promotional push on Sanhagen. But for now, it's the Dillashaw show. But Sanhagen, he can take it all Saturday night, I feel.
And I'd be curious if we were having this conversation if Jan Sterling had a definitive ending, because if that fight had a definitive ending and Jan or Sterling had walked away without the disqualification, like if Jan hadn't thrown that knee and he just when did he throw that, in the final round
fourth round and just finished
it out, and then he was just fighting Corey Sanhagen. Maybe there's a different story there, but who knows?
Was this fight booked before?
No.
It was after.
Yeah, okay. Because Corey Sanhagen, when the knee happened, posted to his Instagram story of him like laughing and like putting like face palming and being like, "God damn it!" Because he had done enough. He had earned the shot, either the rematch against Sterling or the next shot at Jan. So, and then that happened, and then like I don't know how quickly, but almost immediately they booked Dillashaw Sanhagen. Yeah. Almost immediately.
That reminded me of few years back when Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard fought to a draw. But I think was it Anthony Pettis?
It was Pettis.
So Pettis was sitting cage side, and basically he was already set up to face the winner of that, and then the fight was a draw, and then Anthony just like, gah! It's just like Kristen said, it's how the cookie crumbles.
And then he lost to Clay Guida, if I remember correctly.
In
his debut, because he was the WEC champ coming in, and they were going to unify the titles.
That was right after the Benson Henderson Showtime kick, I think.
The knockout that wasn't a knockout.
And regards to Shaheen, we hope he's doing fine. But I keep telling him, man. I was like,
no, it's different. It's different. I know what you're going to say. Yeah. It's different. If you've never won a championship and you make it all the way to the finish line and you're up 2-0 and lose, it's different. The Suns have never won.
No, dude, like, The Astros lost the cards, and then they finally won. But
you guys have won championships before.
The Astros won a few years back. That was their first one.
So if you had lost, but like losing the championship is so much worse. I'd rather have my team just get blown out in the first round than making it to the finish line. I hate losing the championship, because it's like, I feel like a wasted season. I hate it. Like when the Bruins lost to the Blackhawks and the Celtics lost to the Lakers, I'm like, what a wasted season. I'm just like demoralized right now. I would rather have not made the playoffs, because now you get the second to last pick in the first round. You don't get as high of a draft pick. It's a bummer all around. It's terrible.
That's what you think. Excuse me. That's what you think in the moment. You're gonna feel better. Give it a month or so.
I don't. I look back on the 2010 Celtics season. I'm like, we should have won. If Kendrick Perkins had blown his ACL in Game 7, we would have won that championship. If the Bruins just were just not a better team than the Blackhawks. Any team was gonna lose to the Blackhawks that year. What are you gonna say, Kristen?
I was gonna say, I thought you said you weren't that broken up over it. This is a lot of emotion.
No, I'm defending Sean. Like, because people are like, oh, it's not so bad. Like, it's different because, like, I'm like Sean's like since the like Sean's world starts and stops with the Suns. Like, one an international fight week would be like when we go to Vegas all the time. It's always the NBA Summer League, and he would stay up and like watch Suns rookies, not even the starters, like the draft picks play. He would go watch like unsigned players. It's just different when you're that invested in a team. It's one thing to be like, oh, I live in Phoenix, I root for the Suns. Another thing where Sean is scouting players that might not even make the team, and he's sitting through just to this like however old he is his whole life and never making it. It's like it's different. Like when the Red Sox won the World Series in 04, my dad was like, my dad's father died before he got to see that, and my dad was like depressed about that the Red Sox won and he didn't get to see it. It's different when you're that devoted to a team, and I'm not that devoted to the Suns as Sean. So it's Sean's going to feel this for a bit, especially because I don't think they're going to make it again next year or the year after that. Anyway, end of rant on on team sports.
The people in the comments are like, oh my God, again, Jose, please let it go.
It happens. Best fight night card of the year. The main event between Sanhagen and Dillashaw is great, but the card is stacked from top to bottom. Could not agree more. Elise Reed making her debut versus Sajara Eubanks should be a great fight. Yanez Costa, Alan Soriano, Maverick Barber, and of course, Matrix Pavia. On paper, this is the best non-pay-per-view card of the year, question mark. Which fights are you excited about and why? I don't know if it's the best fight of the non-pay-per-view fight card of the year because I can't remember all of the fight nights that kind of blend together, but this fight card rules. This fight card is fantastic, top to bottom. Christian, I'll start with you. On a scale of 1 to 10, how great is this card?
This is like a solid 8, and it can only get better. Like, I'm super pumped for this card, too. All the fights that was called out in that comment are great. I'm super excited to see Elise Reed come in. I think she's a 4-0 prospect, and anytime I see a new prospect, I'm, like, super excited for that. But it's a little bit weird because I believe she initially fights at strawweight, so, like, 115. But this fight, she's going up in weight to go to 125, and then Sajara Eubanks is going down from 135 to 125. So it's kind of confusing, but I don't know. I'm super excited about that one. Yanez and Costa, come on. The promotional stuff they've been doing with the Reese's and the Dr. Pepper, which I've said before on this show, they work better together than separate. So I hate this fight for that reason, because then we might have a definitive winner in the argument between what's better, Dr. Pepper or Reese's. I personally like them both, but yeah, this card is amazing. Macy Barber is back with Miranda Maverick. That's a super interesting fight just because I think it's going to gauge where each woman is in their division. I think that Miranda Maverick is where Macy Barber was when she first came into the UFC. She had rattled off like 3 technical knockouts, 4 if you include her Contender Series appearance. And then she kind of got that push that was to be expected, and she met Roxanne Modafferi. That didn't go well. She was going to rebuild herself after, I think she suffered like an ACL injury in that fight. And then she came back against another up-and-coming divisional talent in Alexa Grasso. That didn't go well either, so I'm wondering what she's going to look like against someone like Miranda Maverick, who is doing basically what she did when she first came in. So a lot of interesting fights. This is one of those cards where I'm like, please, no fight day cancellations because of COVID protocols or something like that, because we've had those, and those suck. So this card is a solid 8. I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, this fight card is the diehard fan's dream. Like, the main event rules, but even the co-main, like Aspilag Mesa Chazon, I think is perfect co-main event. Like, Kyler Phillips is, I think, I don't want to say he came out of nowhere, because in the Arizona scene, he was like one of those people, those fighters that the people tabbed as a future contender. But I think in terms of like the casual USC fan, he kind of just popped up out of nowhere, especially from his win on Fight Island to now. And then Darren Elkins is fighting Derek Minner, who I think Derek Minner is one of the few featherweights in the world that has more wins than like, and not in the outside of the top 15. How many wins do they have? Like 27 and 26 or something like that. Like, they have 50 combined wins between them. So love this card. Puna, Soriano, Brennan Allen. I think that card deserves to be way higher on the card, but don't particularly care. And then awesome card, top to bottom. Casey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how great is this card?
For a free card, yeah, it's great. For a free card, I give it a solid 8. A free fight night card, because it's got a true main event. A true main event with serious title implications. Aspen Ladd, the co-main event. I believe Aspen Ladd might be the best, you know, 135er outside of Amanda Nunes. So she's coming. Is this her first fight since her ACL?
Yeah.
So they're throwing her back in the deep end. So, and you know, can Macy, you know, kind of, you know, she's been hyping herself up for a long time. So to see if she's the real deal. Yeah, Kyler Phillips is fun. But honestly, my people's main event is Barber Maverick. I freaking love that fight. I think Miranda Maverick is, you know, the next woman, the next prospect to really give Valentina a true challenge. We'll see what Lauren Murphy does and everything. But I think when Miranda Maverick hits her peak, she's going to be very, very dangerous. And she's already very good. And I'm just kind of shocked the UFC booked this fight for Barber. Barber coming up 2 losses. And she went from Alexa Grasso to Miranda Maverick. Man, it ain't getting easier for Macy Barber. So, and the rest of the card kind of rules too. It's just a great, it's a fun fight. I mean, it's a fun card. Yeah. Very, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's so weird how uneven we made, because if you look at next week's card,
yeah. But maybe they just knew they were going to have to compete with Bellator and stuff like that, so they stacked this card. But I'm very excited for Kyla Phillips' fight. I've heard from, and I've never witnessed this firsthand, but like him and Casey Kenney and like Sean O'Malley, they all trained up in like the Glendale area. From what I've heard, Kyla Phillips basically could do whatever he wants with Sean O'Malley on the ground. Like when that fight gets to the canvas, Kyla Phillips is like, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, and Sean O'Malley has nothing for him. Obviously, that's fight, that's camp. It's different in a fist fight in front of 30,000 people and a closed environment, and I've also never witnessed this firsthand, but I am very interested to see his future at in Bantamweight. And Pavia absolutely rules too. Brandon Allen Soriano is my quote-unquote people's main event, just because I think those are two exceptional middleweights who are future like top 10 185ers.
You know, anyway, and it's always kind of fun to see the Mickey Gall show, because you kind of don't know what you're gonna get, you know?
Right.
So like that's one of those, like Mickey Gall is one of those fighters, like I don't believe he's gonna be a world beater, top five, top five welterweight. But I feel like we've been along with his on this journey for a while, so we're just invested in the Mickey Gall story. So I like it. Good fun.
Had some his canceled fights that he's lost out on are, like, he's lost out on a Carlos Condit fight, a Cowboy Oliveira fight, and a Miguel Baeza fight. I do not like his chances in any of those fights.
Yeah.
But then, like, who's he lost to? Diego Sanchez, Randy Brown, and was it Mike Perry? Was that his last fight?
I think so, yeah.
And then he's beaten, like, Mike Jackson, CM Punk, and Sage Northcutt. And then I'm sure a few others in there, but weird career. Popular fighter. But to answer this question, this fight card rules.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. What we got here?
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative, along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Ngannou versus Jones on New Year's Eve. DraftKings has a fight between Francis Ngannou versus John Jones listed on their gambling website for December 31st, 2021. Ngannou is the favorite at minus 155 and Jones is plus 135. Website glitch, or do you think that this fight could be happening this year? Anything's possible, but I'll believe it when I see it. That is my answer. Kristen?
Yeah, it might not happen this year. I think we kind of have to wait to see what happens with Ciryl Gane and Derek Lewis, because obviously Francis Ngannou is going to have to meet that person and unify the titles.
Not necessarily.
Well, I know.
I know.
Going off of meritocracy, that's how it would work. And sometimes we don't do that. But I think we'd have to wait to see how that fight plays out, see if we can get something going with Ngannou and the UFC brass, because I know that they've been clashing recently. 2021 seems way too early. Maybe next year. We have to just wait to see how things look like. We haven't heard anything from John Jones in a while, so I'm curious to see what's going on that end, since he's no longer with his previous management. So we got a ways to wait, and I'm happy to wait for it.
Yeah, I'll believe it's. We've talked about this ad nauseum. Nothing's changed outside of an interim title that's only made this possible fight seem less likely. Because I have a feeling if I wouldn't be surprised if the winner of 260 was it 265, if he just fought Francis in Madison Square Garden in New Year's Eve, like so be it. But I don't. I'm not putting any faith in December. Is there even a card on December 31st? Because I thought the UFC. I didn't think the UFC did New Year's Eve cards anymore.
They don't do it. I don't think they're going to do it. They haven't done them for the last 2 years
because of ESPN.
ESPN deal because that's, the bowl, that's bowl season. So ESPN is more devoted to the bowl games.
Yeah. So, college bowl season is so much more of a moneymaker than the UFC for networks. It's
those
unreal.
Those guys get paid even less.
Not anymore. Hey, I don't know if you pay attention to sports outside of MMA, but college athletes, again, is paid now.
When is that going through?
I think that's ASAP.
Yeah, they had now University of Miami, they had some endorsement deals already, like at the ready. So that started.
Cornhuskers
are going to be crypto.com across their uniforms. Is that what
give Reggie Bush's Heisman back? That's all I got to say.
Football. All right. Sprouts ball. All right.
Tan Gwen on Twitter. If TJ wins this weekend, should be allowed to fight for the title next? Sure. If he beats Corey Sandhagen and passes his USADA test, I have no problem if he fights the winner of Jan Sterling, as long as there's a definitive winner. But, yeah, sure. Corey Sandhagen, I think we can all agree after if that, like, he was the rightful number one contender if Jan Sterling didn't have some weird stuff happening. So if TJ beats him, yeah. I don't have an issue. Kristen, do you have an issue if TJ fights for the title if he beats Corey Sandhagen?
Maybe an issue with the timing, just because we don't know when Aljamain Sterling is going to be ready, because I know he recently had some surgery to correct some discs in his neck, mm-hmm. something like that. So who knows when that rematch is going to be. I think the rematch has taken place primarily on Twitter between him and Jan. I don't know how long it's going to take for him to get ready. And then if TJ does win this weekend, how long is he going to wait? Because I know he's always said that I believe I should be fighting for the title right away, and he thinks that one fight is enough for him. But are you going to wait that long? You've been out for 2 years. I don't think he wants to wait. I think there's a possibility he could take one more fight, but then who would that be against? I don't know.
He just did an interview saying he no longer needs to fight for paychecks. Like, he makes enough money outside of fighting. So if he wants to hold out, why not? If he doesn't want to fight, I don't know who else there is. Like, who would he fight? The rematch against Dominic Cruz? I think he would take that just to get a win back. But I don't think TJ would. I don't know. I'm fine. We'll figure it out when Aljamain Sterling comes back.
If TJ wins, UFC is going to book Jan versus TJ for the interim belt.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Honestly, I wouldn't have an issue with that either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think there's a chance if TJ looks good, or wins anyway, to be honest, that Jan just might get bumped and it just could be Sterling?
No.
You don't
think so?
No.
Mm-hmm. UFC wouldn't do that to Jan?
No.
I don't think so. No. All
right.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah,
no. Because we're asking about the, like, in that rivalry, Jan is the healthy one. Like, Aljamain has no, like, Aljamain just had neck surgery. So I think the interim title fight between TJ and Jan is much more likely than.
I like that, yeah.
Aljamain versus, because, like, I think an interim title would be justified because you can't mess around with the neck surgery or neck recovery.
Yeah.
So I don't have any issue. Whether it's interim title or an undisputed title, I don't have a problem.
Actually, Jan versus Jan versus the winner of this weekend for the interim bantamweight belt. I would
love it.
Fantastic.
Love it. If Aljo can't come back, well, because do you remember, Casey, he said he might be able to come back in November, December, Aljamain, because he said he wouldn't mind fighting on the Madison Square Garden card. This is what Aljamain Sterling said backstage when he was the guest fighter. Remember, he came in with that big cup of alcohol and was having a little fun with the media. So maybe that was just him talking. But if he wants to come back in November, so be it. I just want to see that fight. And then the logjam of 135 can continue on.
Okay. All right, let me go pull up some of our YouTube comments.
Powerful trio today. Cool shirts and cool hair all around. Vibe is high. Damn straight.
Yeah.
From Jessica Crystal Crew.
She's got such good takes. So this is a comment after what I said about Aspen Ladd.
Ladd's second best. Ever heard of GDR? I mean, she did just blast Aspen Ladd in the main event and didn't get a performance bonus.
Which implies that the UFC didn't, were not happy of that stoppage. That's still the weirdest thing. Just how Amanda Lemos didn't get one this weekend. I don't understand how it works. If Ladd wins this weekend, I would love to see Ladd GDR rematch. I thought that was a crap stoppage. Yeah, no, GDR dropped her, but it's a fight, you know, so. You're right. You're right. Born again.
135 is, for as much as we talked about 135 kind of being the shallow, like after featherweight, 135 has a lot of fun matches, especially with this, the injection of Misha Tate. Rene Aldana is back in the win column. Holly Holm and GDRs are winning again. Juliana Pena is a fresh matchup for Amanda Nunes. Like 135 is a lot of, I'm not saying any of those guys would fight for the title immediately, but fun fights all around.
They just got to get made.
And they won't. Chandler doesn't really have an excuse now. Islam is at 5 now. Excuse for what? Not fighting?
He's ducking?
I don't have any problem. I'm assuming Michael Chandler, this is... I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. Chinmaya Panda is saying Michael Chandler is ducking Islam Makhachev. Maybe, but I think Michael Chandler really wants to fight Justin Gaethje, and Justin Gaethje is ranked higher, and I think more fans would be interested in that fight as a 5-round chaotic main event. But, Kristen, we're going to use this to start talking about Islam and Michael Chandler in general. If you're the UFC, which fighter do you try to give Islam Makhachev after his domination over Thiago Moises last weekend?
I know he has a few names in mind. There is the fight, obviously. I didn't really think too much about that one just because majority of it was like on Twitter. They're just bickering back and forth. But the more that they do it, the more I'm interested in it. So I wouldn't mind seeing that happen. Let's see. He also called Tony Ferguson out, I guess, to kind of complete the storyline between him and Khabib Nurmagomedov, because obviously Nurmagomedov is his mentor and coach. And I guess he wants to be the guy to take out the boogeyman, so to speak, that was supposed to be the one in 29-1, I guess, against Khabib. A lot of people still thought about that. There's also the Rafael Dos Anjos fight that got canceled like 3 times. They should rebook that. I'm not mad at that fight, and I think it will settle a lot of the beef that they have between one another, because it seems like Rafael Dos Anjos is not super impressed by Islam. I thought he looked good on Saturday against Thiago Moises, so book that fight. Has a storyline behind it. You get to settle some beef that you guys have, and then we can really see where Islam is, because I think he's ranked number 5 now, as the comment pointed out, and I know a lot of people were like shocked about that, but I think he put on a good performance. I think he's worthy of a top 10 contender at this point. So those 3 names are pretty good.
I would also have no problem if Islam fought Benil Dariush. I know they're both managed by the same manager, Ali. It depends on, because Dariush's wife just had their first child. So if he's taking daddy time, that's a different story. I know our colleague, Sean, who we just spoke of, with his heart broken, but he put together like a mock lightweight card. Like if they did just a lightweight card, like they did like 146, I think was the card, the all heavyweight card. It was Charles Oliveira, Poirier at the top, Justin Gaethje, Michael Chandler, co-main event, Dariush Makhachev, Ferguson Hooker, RDA Gillespie, and also said he would have no problem if he did Gaethje, Dariush, and Chandler Makhachev. I don't have a problem with any of those fights because 155 rules. I think Greg Gillespie and Brad Riddell have also kind of been interested in rebooking their fight against one another. I think Brad Riddell's a fantastic fighter too. But Hooker, RDA sounds fun. Ferguson, like all these fights sound fun. I don't care. Just have them fight. I don't care who they fight.
So on the real rankings, MMA Fighting's rankings, we have Islam ranked at number 7. So
We made those rankings before his win.
Yeah, but I don't think anything would change. I'm looking at the rankings. I don't think anything would have changed. Maybe he might bump up in front of Ferguson, because we have Ferguson right in front of him. I think just to the dominance of that victory, even with a lower-ranked opponent, yeah, I would see. I could see Makhachev going up one spot. But, as long as Islam fights a name, I'm happy. And that's all. That's what he needs. He just needs to fight names. It can be Dan Hooker. And, you know, even though Dan Hooker coming off 2 losses, if Dan wants it, I mean, whatever. Dan Hooker's a name. RDA makes more sense. But the Dariush fight is the fight I really want to see, but that's probably the most doubtful because of the management issues. And Chandler, what's going on with Justin Gaethje? That seems like what's going on. He's kind of radio silent, right? What's going on?
Gaethje? I don't. If you watched our interview with our good friend Oscar Willis of the Mac Life, he did an interview with Dana White, and he asked him straight up, are you ready to announce Gaethje Chandler? And Dana was like, I want to. There's just a few things we got to get through first. So it seems like that's the direction they're going.
I always wonder what those things are. Like, what are those things? Is it just I want a better hotel room? Like, what are these things? You know.
I can tell you exactly what the thing he was referring to. It was a big fight between Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. He wanted to get past first because speaking with UFC PR, they's like Dana White. Like when he on these big pay per view cards, there's a lot of fights that want to get made that he just has to get through the pay per view fight week first.
He has to see the results of that fight before.
Yeah.
Or he just can't focus on anything else besides that fight week.
Come on, Dana, multitask. All right.
Is everybody at the UFC and Conor in denial that Dustin won the trilogy? I knew Dustin was going to win when it was 5.5 months after UFC 257. Yeah, so we'll talk about Conor's recent post about his ankle. He posted a bunch of photos about his ankle wrapped up. He said that Dana White said he has like chronic arthritis in his ankles, he didn't say like this was the reason, but kind of hinted at, you know, Conor has his history of bad ankles and that's why his ankle broke. But Kristen, what do you make of all of this new talk of Conor's fragile ankles?
And his ankle didn't break.
Is this the new Floyd Mayweather has fragile hands conversation?
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised that we're still talking about it like weeks later. It's kind of a bummer because I'm wondering how effective all of this talk is on the perception of the fight itself, especially when it comes to like a certain demographic where they fully believe that, you know, had he not been injured, maybe he would have turned things around in the second round. I don't know. But it's odd that all this stuff starts to come out. I'm not going to lie. I was kind of interested when it first started to like unravel and Conor was like, well, the UFC knew that I was injured. The doctor knew. And then he starts posting x-rays and whatnot. And I'm like, well, it's certainly interesting. I don't know if it adds anything to the narrative that you lost the fight. So it's just been pretty weird. There's a lot of excuses coming out. And I'm just genuinely shocked that we're talking about this and not really Dustin Poirier got another win over arguably the biggest star the UFC has ever had. I think that does a disservice to someone like Dustin Poirier, who's probably the best lightweight that the UFC has right now, not counting Charles Oliveira and Khabib Nurmagomedov, but he's gone, he's retired. So I don't know why we're doing this still. It's just very odd to me.
Why we're doing it is because Conor makes the UFC a lot of money. That's all. If he didn't make him that much money, they'd be like, oh, he lost, moving on. Mm-hmm. That's all. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, we didn't spend this much time talking about Chris Weidman or Anderson Silva when they broke their legs. Like, it just happens. Shit like that happens in these fights. It's not a surprising thing, but it's just like, why is one person getting so much like benefit of the doubt as opposed to these other guys that legitimately snapped their legs just in a similar fashion, but there wasn't a big like stink about it.
Money.
That's also dim. He also broke his tibia, not his ankle.
Yeah, that's like the giant thing. Like, it was his leg that broke, not his ankle. It's his freaking leg that broke. And all the ankle imaging he kept showing, that's his ankle. He broke his leg. He broke his tibia from throwing reckless naked leg kicks at people's knees and elbows. That's not good. So,
he broke his. It was a double fibular tibular break. Nothing in the ankle broke. So,
it's weird. It's just weird. All right.
He broke his leg, not the articulating joint. as I think someone said on Twitter. I can't. I apologize if I don't know. Remember who said it.
And the difference in the Floyd Mayweather, the broken hands thing, Floyd won those fights.
Well, I didn't mean like I'm not using it as an excuse, but like every single fight card that every single fight Floyd has is, oh, he can't punch hard because his hands are broken. Like, are people gonna oh, Conor can't kick now because of his ankles? Hey, come on.
I'm sure he'll kick when he's back.
Yeah, as soon as the first face-off happens at the weigh-ins, he'll kick again.
Right.
He loves kicking. He kicks when the fight's not even happening.
Corey Sanhagen versus TJ Dillashaw is a banger from Four Corner Sports NY on Twitter. Corey Sanhagen versus TJ Dillashaw is a banger of a main event. But if TJ was to lose, how would we view him after a 2.5-year layoff via suspension? Well, TJ Dillashaw would be losing to Corey Sanhagen. And a lot of people think Corey Sanhagen might just be the uncrowned champ. Like, he lost to Sterling fair and square. But he would lose to an incredibly high-level bantamweight after 2.5 years off. I mean, he still looked – everyone still held him in high regard after he lost to Dominic Cruz after Dominic Cruz was on a long layoff. Dominic Cruz was an incredibly high-level bantamweight. But, Kristen, to answer Four Corner Sports NY's questions, if TJ loses, how should we view him?
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, at least you went out to someone who is at the top of their game at bantamweight, so I don't think there's really much shame. I know a lot of people would perpetuate the idea of ring rust being a real thing. If you're a believer in that, that's you. If you're not, then it's just a loss to a really good contender and a future champion, possibly. So I don't really think I'd look at him any different. I just think he flew too close to the sun, and sometimes it doesn't work out for you, so...
I think if he loses, do we look at his previous, pre-suspension, Dillashaw is like of an asterisk almost, it's like, because was that like juiced up Dillashaw? Are we going to see it like that? Like post-suspension, is he?
I'm sure some people will.
Yeah, but didn't they say that they tested all of his samples before that? So yeah,
that's what he said.
Yeah, would there really be an asterisk? I just think you got beat by a better fighter. That's probably how it is.
Someone actually brought it up. I saw it on Twitter, and I looked at it. I was like, wow, I didn't really think about it. But I looked at TJ's record, and, I know be revisionist history, but looking back on it now, his best victory is probably, Cody Garbrandt just isn't seen in the same light anymore. It's probably John Lineker, So like, it's been a long time. All his best victories, these guys aren't elite bantamweights anymore. So it's gonna I'm not saying TJ isn't still one, but that's why this main event Saturday is so gosh darn interesting. We're gonna find out.
Right. Yeah, because people forget when he beat Hannon Burrell was the man. Like, a lot of people thought he was the pound-for-pound best fighter on planet.
Joe Rogan did.
Yeah, like, we were comparing him to Mayweather, because he had, 30-something wins in a row. Like, people comparing him to Mayweather, and then he did it again, except even more violently, and then he avenged that loss to Sun Tzu. And then his fight against Lineker at UFC 207 was, a work of art. That's, the most one-sided beatdown I've had, everywhere. Wrestling, striking, grappling, TJ just put it on him. And then the Dominic Cruz fight. A lot of people think TJ won. That's one of the best fights.
It was very close.
That is the best fight night main event I have ever seen. In a competitive high-level martial arts contest. Because that was a fight night card on FS1. Yeah. That is the most high-level competitive fight I've ever seen in a main event on fight night.
It was a great fight. It had a great story coming into it, too.
Unbelievable, yeah. Everything was perfect. It was still, one of the 10 greatest fights I think I've ever witnessed live. And then I think you said it, the two Cody fights. A lot probably didn't age as well as we thought.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to, revisionist things. I don't like all that stuff.
Sure. Neither do I.
This is MMA. The game keeps changing. The bantamweights, the bantamweights seem to be getting better and better. Like, Hannon Burrell was amazing 6 years ago, but even that Hannon Burrell in his prime, can he still be champ in this era of 135ers? I don't think so. Who knows? But that's why I think the bantamweight division is the best in the world. right now.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Another question from Four Corner Sports. Maverick versus Barber seems like the perfect matchup to see which prospect deserves the quote-unquote push. If Barber was to lose, that would mean she would be on a three-fight losing streak. Would a loss hurt her on ever trying to compete for a title? Loss to Roxanne and Grosso? I think it would definitely put a halt at her flyweight title aspirations. But if she wants to go back to 115 healthy, maybe she can restart fresh there. But I don't know. It's a tall task, but Casey, you were really high on this card, this fight specifically. I like this fight as well. If Barbara were to lose, she'd be on a three-fight losing streak. So let's play hypothetical. Like, I know this fight, they haven't even weighed in yet, but if she were to lose, what would that do to her career?
It would suck. I mean, it would. That's I mean, I think. I don't know if what's going on in Barbara's camp. Where is she training?
She's bounced around a lot.
Yeah. Maybe that's the issue. Her bouncing around gym to gym. Maybe there's some other, you know, things that we don't know about, you know, her training life, you know, that aren't good for her. That's not working for her in the cage. So, Barbara clearly is a high level talent. Maybe she was. I believe she was just pushed way too hard by the UFC and maybe by the media too. But she brought it upon herself too. She was hyping herself up. I think she was going like, I'm gonna be youngest champ ever. Wasn't she one of those fighters? Yeah, young. I'm next John Jones and everything. So I mean, good on her for having that confidence. Unfortunately, it just she just wasn't as good as her confidence told her she was. Mm-hmm. If I was in Basie Barber's camp, I would have stayed so far away from Miranda Maverick. I don't know why this fight got made. I mean, I know why the UFC made it because, you know, it's a high level matchup. But for Barber's career, I just think even if she beats Miranda Maverick, I think the average fan doesn't know who Miranda Maverick is yet. So for as hard as this victory will be, I don't think she'll get the credit for it if she does win. And if she loses, I mean, that's 3-5 losing streak. You have no leverage for a very long time in your career.
Kristen, what do you make of Macy's future if she comes up short to Miranda Maverick?
I mean, like Casey said, it would suck, but I don't think that she would ever not compete for a title. I think that'd be like too soon to call. Macy Barber's super young, and of course she's going to have to learn these kinds of deal with these losses, which she has dealt with before. I know a lot of people made a big fuss out of the way she dealt with the Roxanne Modafferi loss, because that was kind of, wasn't the best. It was kind of crappy, to be honest. And with the Alexa Grasso one, I feel like she was a little bit more retrospective on that one, but it was still very hard for her to swallow as well. But that's just the thing. When you hype yourself up because you know you're going to be a champion one day, of course, these kinds of losses, they really do suck. But I don't think that she'll never compete for a title. I think that'll come later on. But she's going to have to deal with these types of fights. And at least she's doing it now when she's young. And I hope that if she does lose again, she doesn't take it the wrong way. She just only learns to build and grow from that. And I still think that she's a contender. And just give her a couple of years. I'm sure she's going to be challenging for the title eventually. So it's not completely over. It might be stalled for a little while. But she could work her way back. I'm not really too worried about Macy right now.
Man, but losing three fights ever in the UFC, sorry, but losing three fights is always bad.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And that's more, that's what more I was talking about. She just has no leverage. I mean, so like the UFC can do whatever they want of her, you know, like here fighting, you know, I don't know, some whatever Lincoln, not Nebraska. I don't know why I say Lincoln, Nebraska. That's a fine city, but she just won't have any control of her career. That's what I meant. So it's just going to be tough.
Yeah, it makes sense. But I feel like she's one of those fighters that are, you know how Dana White has a soft spot for them? I feel like she kind of lines up in that category just because what she was able to do before she made it to Contender Series. And then she had those three technical knockout wins over some pretty impressive names considering her division. So I think she still gets a pass. I'm sorry. I don't want to give up too soon on Macy Barber. I think they will handle her with leniency should she move forward with another loss. But I don't think she's going to get her pink slip after if she loses. They might give her another fight. And then if we're talking four straight losses, then we might have to revisit this conversation. But for right now, I still think she's kind of in the green zone.
Macy has also had a lot of drama with martial arts fans outside of fighting. Because I don't know if you remember that whole black belt, blue belt drama that happened, what, 5-6 years ago, where they were winning. I think it was like, was it karate or taekwondo? Or it was not a jiu-jitsu black belt. It was a legitimate black belt in another martial art, but they were wearing their black belts while teaching jiu-jitsu, and it was like all over their website and everything for whatever school they were. And the Gracies actually had to like come out and be like, they're not BJJ black belts, they're a different one. And then her dad, wasn't there drama with her dad after the Roxanne fight when he like was like posting stuff on his Instagram?
Yeah, he basically was trying, you know,
downplay Roxanne's win.
He was Dana White. What Dana White does for Connor, you know, Macy had arthritis in her knee, you know, that's why she lost, you know, but so it didn't help the situation.
And the trash talk with Paige. Remember she like had that fake DM from Paige's. She like photoshopped a fake DM.
That was a mistake.
So it's like she didn't do herself favors in the eyes of the fans. And do you think is Miranda Maverick a harder test than Grasso and Roxanne?
Equally,
I think all three are completely different types of fighters too.
Yeah,
because I think Grasso is freaking amazing at 125 too. So,
me too.
There's just a lot of good 125ers, and I think for a while we only thought Macy Barber was the only good prospect,
right?
Because that's the only one Dana White talked about. But it turns out there's a lot of good flyweight prospects. I think that's it.
And I think Miranda Maverick, after her last fight, she had names to call out too, but it wasn't like because Macy Barber called out Paige, Montana De La Rosa, and Mackenzie Dern, none of whom were ranked at the time because like they had the most fans on the internet. After Miranda Maverick won her last fight, she's like, I'm going to fight the winner of Antonina Shevchenko and Andrea Lee, which is a tough fight, regardless of who won. So just going about it differently, I think this is an awesome fight. I favor Miranda.
Me too.
And I'm very curious how both of these women go move on after this.
And Maverick had the benefit of taking her losses outside of the UFC. Mm-hmm. She lost in Invicta, so there just weren't as many eyes on her or as much pressure on her when she had her losses. I mean, they essentially have the same record and they're the same age. You're 8-2, 9-2. One's 24, one's 23. So, I mean, whoever loses, it's not catastrophic, but it would be worse for Barber.
Macy Barber hits so hard for 125 too. When she was fighting Grasso was clearly the better boxer. Mm-hmm. But every time Macy Barber landed, shook. She was like, God damn, this like, so like out of everyone at 125, she has like KO power standing outside of like the champ and like Andrade. So, but Miranda Maverick is super strong as well. So love the fight.
Yeah. Problem is you need more than a fastball. You know, you gotta have one more.
Dude,
yeah.
She has an atomic bomb and she throws those standing elbows like no one else at 125. Yeah. So she can keep it standing. Call power to her. Anyway.
Cool. Oops, sorry. Not real quick.
Four Corner Sports NY. Is this the third one in a row? Did the UFC miss a golden opportunity of putting the people's main event, Giannis versus Costa, on the main card instead of the prelim? And which fighter of the two has the higher ceiling. So is this the quote unquote featured prelim?
No, but it should be if it's not going to be on the main card. They should have put that as like the preliminary fight to open up the main
so
card.
This is what I don't even like this. Like I've said this a few times, this whole prelim main card thing, let's just call it high or low on the card, because the prelim is on ESPN and the main card is on ESPN. You don't even have to change the channel. It's basically just one long card. The only difference is Bruce Buffer makes another announcement at the beginning of the main card. So let's just call it UFC on Vegas 31, and it's just one massive card. Should it be higher? Sure. Maybe higher than Mickey Gall and Jordan Williams or Darren Elkins, Derek Minner, but which fight do you knock off the main card if we're using this main card prelim card, Kristen?
The one you just said? I'd probably
which
knock
one?
Off
Elkins,
Gall
Minner.
And Jordan Williams.
Oh, yeah.
No, not that one. I mean the
that fight card, that fight rules Elkins
like
and Minner.
I like it, but I think that it would be better suited on the lower portion. Did I get that right? Is that how you want to say it now? Low?
Earlier on the night.
Earlier yeah. in the night. There you go. I think that'd be better. And then we can have Yanez and Costa open up the higher portion of the card. I like that.
Now, here's what we do. Randy Costa, Adrian Yanez fight. They have a banger of a fight. Then they're buddies. And then in the later half of the card, they get the UFC can pan over to them drinking Dr. Pepper and eating Reese's during a fist fight.
That's great.
There you go.
Like how they did in Strikeforce when Miesha Tate finished her fight and then they panned over and she was eating a cupcake. They should do that.
Yeah. Or like, remember when Joanna beat Claudia and then immediately after went and sat next to Dana White for the later half of the card?
That's great.
More opportunities for both of these men to get camera time on sitting cage side. Also, like, how many fights does Randy Costa have in the UFC? Two? Three? Three. He has three fights. He's 2-1. Adrian Yanez is – I think Adrian Yanez has a little bit of a brighter prospect, but Randy Costa is super impressive and well-spoken. What's next for Matt Mitrione? This is a two-part question from Dan Pompilio on Twitter. We're going to fly through this one. What's next for Matt Mitrione, who, of course, just got – him and Bellator just parted ways after his loss, his last loss. Kristen, if you had to pick, what's next for Matt Mitrione?
Maybe – try your luck in PFL. I saw someone say bare knuckle fighting. I was like, hell no, I do not want to see Matt Mitrione do that. But maybe PFL, if you have a shot, definitely try it.
Casey?
Dude, I love Matt Mitrione bare knuckle fighting. What are you talking about? That would be great. He's not a takedown guy. He doesn't really have heavy kicks. He just throws big wide punches. I like it. Matt Mitrione bare knuckle. Let's do it.
If the PFL comes back next year for another season after this, then go for it. Other than that, I have no idea where he would go, if not bare knuckle.
Yeah, he might. Matt Mitrione might call it a day.
He's on the wrong side of 40 for an individual that's on a five fight. Well, I know there's a no contest somewhere in there, but he hasn't won a fight since his win over Roy Nelson. And even that one, if I remember correctly, was like a majority fight or something like that, right? Like, it wasn't like a dominant performance.
Yeah. I mean, he's had some bad luck. I know a couple of fights he's been headbutted in the fights and the refs didn't see him and it obviously affected the fights. But I think for what Mitrione is right now and probably his price tag, I understand Bellator making that move. So good luck to Matt Mitrione.
Let him go fight Marius Pujanowski in KSW. Yeah.
Or
go fight in one championship because then you can kick. So there was a second half to that question, Casey.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. AJ McKee versus Pitbull next week. If AJ wins, he's the best 145er in the world. No, but I would say he's clearly top five featherweights in the world. I think there's like a logjam of Volkanovski, and I don't think he's better than Volkanovski and Holloway. If you want to argue he's third, I don't have a problem with that.
Whoever wins next week, Pitbull or AJ McKee, I don't have an issue saying that they're the best 45er in the world. That's all. I don't rank him as right there, but they're right. Both of them are my – if AJ right now, my top five, he's right outside the top five. Pitbull, I think I have at number – I have Pitbull at number two, actually, behind Max Holloway. No issue. I mean, if AJ wins – he can beat anyone else in the world too. He just needs to face him. That's all.
Kristen?
I'm in agreement with you. I think one of the best, maybe not the best for right now, but he's definitely in the top five.
Yes. I would just say Max and like Volkanovski. I don't subscribe to that. Oh, the UFC is always better competition than Bellator. I'm just talking about these two, like these individuals in general. I just think Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway have fought higher competition for a prolonged period of time. AJ has clearly over the last few years has dominated his opponents, but I just think like back-to-back wings over Max Holloway is super impressive for me against Holloway. For Volkanovski, and then Holloway, I think, is the most talented one featherweight in the world. At worst, AJ could be the third best featherweight, which is great. That's great. Sorry.
No issue with that.
Yeah, those three would be the best.
Just super whoever wins for the fight.
For this fight, whoever wins this fight, I put him at number three featherweight.
Yeah, no problem.
American Rustic Works in the YouTube comments. Any rumors on Gillespie and his next opponent? I know Brad Riddell was very interested in rebooking that fight after their previous fight fell apart due to COVID violations. Or not violations. It was someone tested positive for someone COVID in one of their camps. I think it was Brad Riddell. But Gillespie just – who did he just dominate?
Who was it?
Diego Ferreira?
Ferreira, yeah.
And he is a high level. He is a very high level lightweight. And then Brad Riddell and Drew Dober had a banger of a fight in Glendale. So I like that fight in general. Also because they were booked against each other already. I don't think they're top 10 lightweights, but they're clearly top 15. They're clearly talented to be top 10. I'm just talking about where they are in the actual rankings. I don't think either of them ranked or. Are they ranked in the MMA fighting rankings?
Who?
Yes, Gillespie in the MMA fighting global rankings. Gillespie's 12 and Riddell is 14. I like that fight. Both because they both seem interested in it, and so it could actually happen.
If Islam fights someone behind him in the rankings, I would love it for it to be Gillespie. Actually.
So I think
I know Islam wants someone ahead of. I know he wants someone ahead of him, but if he can't get it and they put someone behind him. I love wrestler matchups.
Yeah.
I think,
Kristen, who would you like Gregor Gillespie to fight next?
No, I like that matchup. I thought I saw somewhere that Renato Moicano maybe called out Gregor Gillespie. I'm not sure how that fight would go, but I'd like to see it too. That'd be nice.
I think if timing-wise, if I'm trying to book all of these, I would really like Gillespie and Riddell on the New York card because, of course, Gillespie's from New York, and he usually performs very well in New York outside of getting decapitated by Kevin Lee. And then I know Dan Hooker wants to fight on same cards as his teammate. So if Dan Hooker fights Makhachev, who I bet they want to put on the MSG card too, because there's a big Russian population in New York. So you could have Hooker and Riddell training together against two other high level lightweights. So all around, I just think timing it makes sense too for those matchups. Does Brandon Moreno have the potential to be a UFC star? Potential. The man is a star, my man. I'm sorry. I can't tell by your photo. Whatever. It's very small. Takiro. Oh, Takiro Man 91, I'm going to assume. But yes, Brandon Moreno is a star.
You know what?
He's a nerd.
It is up to the UFC now to book him like he's a star. Mighty Mouse got main event pay-per-views. They didn't sell well, but the UFC needs to try it again and build up Brandon Moreno, build up an exciting matchup. And throw him in a pay-per-view main event. I'm ready for it. We just shot a Brandon Moreno lunch yesterday, media lunch, the first one since the pandemic. And the guy is just incredibly unique. There's no one like him in the sport. There's so many fighters, I train hard. I'm gonna knock this guy's out, all that. Brandon Moreno ain't that. He's a unique personality. He's smart. He's funny. He doesn't need to put this macho man front, So I love it. And he is a killer and a savage, as Rogan would say.
I want him to – I don't know if I would put him on a pay-per-view headliner yet. I would love to put him on ESPN Free TV to make him a star. against like a really high level fight and then give him these big names for pay-per-view stars. I also think that it would be a travesty if they don't put him and Valentina on the same card when the world opens up, because they're both Spanish speaking champions at 125. Like, if you're going to go to Uruguay or Paraguay or Argentina or anything like this, like, stick those two on the same card, or Mexico. Yeah. It would just make too much sense, because they can carry the promotional work for them by, because they could speak both to the American and the Hispanic audience.
I mean, I know COVID's a giant issue, but yes. But man, imagine if they had Brandon Moreno headlining in Mexico City. Jeez, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, be awesome. And then you just with Irene and Alexa and all those guys. Right. What was Alexa,
what happened to UFC on ABC? Was that a one-time thing? I think that'd be a good place to put him.
Yeah,
on.
That's what I'm saying. I would love to have him be on an ABC card.
Yeah,
or anywhere like that.
But like primetime ABC, because remember that was like a daytime card on ABC. You know,
well, it was a day. It was. I thought that was a primetime card because it was crack of dawn and Fight Island.
No, I remember. Ending like late afternoon. It was like.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
my sense of time was distorted over there.
Yeah. By the way, but it didn't have that. Even though it was on ABC, it didn't have that. That early UFC on Foxville.
Well, I think that was like ABC came in like late notice and was like, hey, stick this on ABC. I don't think it was always billed as like, we're making our debut. Also, like, no one steered into it. Like, do you remember on like Wild Wars, World of Sports on ABC, everyone wore the gold jackets? And no one wore a gold jacket. And I was like, I saw John Anik. He's like, I didn't. Like, if I had heads up, I would have had a gold jacket. I'm like, yeah, duh, because it would be stupid not to anyway.
All right,
Christian, what are you going to say about Brandon Moreno? Sorry.
No, I had nothing else. Brandon Moreno.
Yeah, he rules.
He rules.
I think you could say he's the breakout star of 2020 if he's headlining cards. Right? Right, yes. Casey? Right? Yes. Not Kamaru Usman, Brandon Moreno.
He's right there, 1 and 2.
No, he is. That's the answer. Tell everyone what
Brandon
we talked
Moreno,
about.
Brandon Moreno can't headline pay-per-views yet.
You just said he should.
I said he should, but you just said he can't. I said he should because it ain't my money.
No, I said we should stick him on free TV and make him a global star. You don't pay for pay-per-view. You get the money right back. Expensive. Anyway.
Last question.
Are you three fans of the MCO? If so, thoughts on the Loki series?
No. I haven't started.
Are you a fan, though?
I am, and I can't. Literally, I was pissed.
None of us. You don't need to keep coming here.
I know, but I don't want you guys to talk about it because I'm.
All I want to say is no, I'm not a fan of the MCU, but not because I don't want it to exist. It just does nothing for me. I have no interest in it. But Julia is, and I want to say the end of Loki. I called that 2 years ago. You can go on my Twitter. I called it. Everyone that called for very specific, very boring, very, I don't like using this word, but like if you have a surface level knowledge of comic books, you're going to call for very specific villains. And they're boring. And they're not terrible transitional villains. You need transitional villains. And this is he is a fantastic transitional villain. And I nailed that shit in 2019. Called it. On the nose.
That's enough. You're going to ruin it for me. Stop.
But no, I don't watch Loki. The Scarlet Witch series was boring. I watched the end of it and I could not stop laughing. And then I didn't watch a single second of Winter Soldier and Falcon.
I haven't seen.
If this path is continuing on, I also nailed the Scarlet Witch storyline too. But I didn't nail it because they're literally in the books behind me.
Okay, you keep that knowledge to yourself. Let me watch
it. I'm not saying people might. I don't want to ruin it for you.
Thank you.
My favorite part of the Loki series is at the very end when Loki.
I will literally disconnect.
He's right Casey's now, not going to give anything.
I don't care about MCU stuff. I don't care. Who is Loki?
Loki is the god of mischief. Thor's half brother. He's half Asgardian, half.
He was in Ragnarok, right? Ragnarok is the one I liked.
He is in all of the Thor. He is to Thor what the Joker is to Batman. So My only issue is with this Loki, because Tom Hiddleston is such a good actor and he's so good as Loki from what I've, because I've never seen any of the Thor movies. I've only seen, I think, 1.5 of the Avengers movies. And he's a very good Loki, but he's so good that people love him so much that the comic books have now made him a hero. And I'm just like, oh, we're just going to forget the last 40 years where he's tried to commit genocide and now he's a hero? Like, come on. Like, it's like people trying to make change. The Joker a hero.
People change.
People yeah. don't change. People don't change when you're trying to destroy an entire race for 40 years. It just doesn't happen unless you're being played by Tom Hiddleston, apparently, which is fine. He's a very good actor. He nails it. So good on him. I would like to. I can't give it away.
Speaking of Tom, what's his name? Tom Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston.
I just watched. Because it just got released on Netflix. I just watched Crimson Peak, and he's one of the main actors.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, it's a good movie.
I was like, hey, that's Loki.
It's a good movie.
I was like, it's a good movie. You should watch it. All right.
Good horror movie. Anyway. Kirsten, thank you for joining us. And I won't give any Loki spoilers away, but plug whatever you want to plug before we sign off this week of the A-Side.
Oh, man, I don't have anything to plug. Just thank you guys for bringing me back here. Truly appreciate it, obviously. And I can't wait to chop it up with you guys again. This is the most fun I've had on a Wednesday. And that's saying a lot. So thank
Kristen,
you.
Yeah, you love your Wednesdays, too. Yeah, you love Wednesdays.
There's one thing I know about Kristen is she loves her Wednesdays.
It's Wednesday.
Wednesday. Casey, what do you got to say before we sign off?
Yeah, hope everyone's doing great. Thank you for watching. Thank you for supporting MMA Fighting and watching all of our videos and podcasts and stuff. And we got Mike Heck in Florida, somewhere in Florida, wherever. And he's covering BKFC and the main event, Paige VanZant versus Rachel Ostovich. Of course.
Part two.
The rematch. This time, no gloves.
We'll have presser, workouts, and one-on-ones come from Mike. I think that's today, and then tomorrow's the weigh-ins, and then Friday's the fight night, and then Saturday we get a banger of a UFC card. I don't think there's Casey. Is there between the links tomorrow?
No, sir.
There will be no between the links tomorrow because Mike is, of course, doing groundwork down in Florida. And then preview show will be Friday, fights on Saturday, post show Saturday, and then you guys know the drill. Anyway, we'll see you next Wednesday if you only watch the A-Side.
Suns in 9.
Woo!
Sure, why not? DM me if you want to. Someone message me if they want to know more about why I'm so smart with my Loki knowledge.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.